St. Francis said he wore a patched robe because he wanted to appear to others exactly as he was on the inside. Wounded and weak, as we all are, if we really are honest, he had faced his broken self, and it was precisely there that he met the most unconditional of loves. God uses everything, you see, even and especially our mistakes. St. Augustine said the same. In my deepest wound, I found you, Lord, and it dazzled me. One of the things we fear so much when we talk about ourselves, or we think about ourselves, is that somehow we will be discovered, the parts of us that we are really not aware of, maybe ourselves, those things that we see as flaws or things that we've been told are somehow inadequacies or inabilities or somehow limitations. Or we're afraid that our deepest, darkest thoughts will betray us. The things that perhaps cross our minds when we know perhaps we should be more kind or more understanding. The things perhaps we think in response to the situations we see in the world, the people we happen to meet, the circumstances that other people struggle with every day that may not be a part of our experience. It's so difficult for us to be truly, truly honest. But by saying that, I am admitting that it is extremely hard for us to truly be humble. Humility, it is said, is defined as truth. Humility is what keeps us from becoming God or even approaching perfection. That keeps us somewhat always aware that we all do indeed have limitations. And that if we look at ourselves as we look at ourselves and others, we see that basically we are all the same. Because no one is perfect in any way. Even the greatest athletes with the highest records are not perfect people. Even the greatest musicians and the most wondrously celebrated actors are not perfect. They may be good at their craft or their gift, but that is not perfection as humanity sees perfection. We are living in a world where it's very difficult to find honesty, where you can find true humility. Because we tend to be very outspoken, very strong opinions that make enemies of those who disagree. We find ourselves in conflicts, in relationships, families, or circumstances that challenge our sensitivity and our sacredness and our safety. It's very hard for anyone to say, let me go stand in front of God as I truly am. Because in that moment, we become aware of all that is missing. St. Paul. It's a very, very great, intelligent, very spiritual, and also a very dedicated Christian person, convert. And as a convert, he brought with him everything that was a part of his life in the past. And what had been a part of his life in the past had been the law. If you fulfill the law, then you do everything that God wants you to do, because the law speaks perfectly of what God intends. Francis, on the other hand, really captured the ideals of the Beatitudes, which are not laws, which are descriptions of the character of the person who has God in his or her life. He never quoted the Beatitudes, but he became really in history the most developed experience of Beatitude living, because he began very simply with a truth that God is God and I am not, and that the world around me in all of its details speaks about God, reveals God. The nature of the world in which we live, the universe, the plants, the animals, the atmosphere, the beauty of individuals, the growth that takes place, all the dynamics of the physical world and the spiritual world all combine together to constantly, constantly, constantly reveal God to us. And in that very revelation, he found himself to be utterly amazed, because he knew that the divine was much greater than himself. And he never tried to capture it. He never made a religion out of it. He never ordered anybody to think the way he thought. He lived his life as he decided he needed to live in order to dialogue properly and be open to the God in which he believed. His way of life was captured through history by religious organizations and kind of canned, if you will, programmed into a lifestyle. And the thinking is, as it is for Paul in the law, if you do everything that he was doing in his life, then you become Francis. And not only do you become Francis, but you become the person who is open to God and living your life as God intends you to live. And we know that after all these hundreds of years, Franciscan theology and monastic life have changed 5 times. They've been renewed because every time you get to a certain point, they realize, we're not doing this right anymore. Let's go back to the book. And they go back to Francis, and you have the Franciscans, the Capuchins, the ministers of renewal. You have all these different organizations that become Franciscan-based, but what is really true here? And this is where I want to take this. Paul says in Romans, and I'm going to paraphrase what he says because if you read it, it's very confusing. But let me make it very simple. He said, I've grown up my whole life with the law, and I believe that the law tells me about God. And that law by which I live is the salvation of all the world. And in Romans, which is the last part of his life, it was the last letter he wrote. He was in prison when he wrote it. He had time to think about all of that and reflect. And you know, Paul made some wonderful laws in his day. You heard the one about wives shall be submissive to their husbands, and women should walk always with their head covered. You hear some of that Middle Eastern thought that Paul said, unless you have done such and so, you cannot be part of the communion. Paul made all kinds of rules around regulations. He defined very, very well what adultery was, to the point where we became, as Christian people, afraid of our own bodies. Paul made some very, very strong statements, but in the end of his life, in the last year of his life, when he wrote Romans, he made a confession. And his confession is in Romans 7 and concludes in Romans 8. And in Romans 7, Paul says very simply this. You know, I've been doing this my whole life. And I've been pursuing God. Now, you know, I was knocked off my horse on the way to Jericho. And you know that the problems that I had throughout my life, I suffered for God. I was shipwrecked. I was beaten. I was in prison. I did all these things, and I suffered all this stuff. And I said, God is with me. God is with me. God is with me. And I truly believe that. But my experience leads me to something else. And maybe this is where we are too. I've done everything right, and I still find myself doing something that I said I would never do. I find myself acting in some ways where I know the law says this is not true, but I find myself even going against the law. In fact, I'm so confused sometimes because I think maybe all the things that I've done in the past and all the things I've thought in the past are wrong. And maybe there is something more. But I just know that as many times as I promise to do something, I end up doing the opposite. And that tells me there's something inside me that is never going to be right. It tells me there's something in me that will never let me truly be the person I think I need to be in God's presence. And he calls that part of himself sin. There is a part of me that is sin that will not allow me to move into another direction, even though I choose to, even though I desire it. And so he felt helpless. Until he suggested to himself, wait a minute. If that's true of all of us, then isn't it time that I begin to accept what Jesus revealed? That God doesn't care about any of that. That God cares about you as you are. As you are. Not as you think you are. As you are. We have a hard time seeing ourselves as we really are. If you look at the front of the bulletin, this little photograph here is just not so important as what it's talking about. The true mirror. You know, there's a thing now in the world that scientists have created that's called the true mirror. And when you look in the mirror, and we look in the mirror, all of us, all the time, you're not really seeing yourself as you are. You're seeing a reversal of yourself. You're seeing the opposite. You're looking at yourself in the mirror, and your right side is really your left side, and your left side is really your right side. If you hold up a book in front of you, all the writing is backwards because it's a reflection of you. It is not you. When I was doing studies in photography a zillion years ago, and people wanted me to do portrait photography, I did one. Because I was convinced after one session that no matter what picture I showed this person of herself, she didn't see herself that way at all. And it's true. We see our real selves in the photographs that people take of us. But to be able to stand in front of a mirror and see ourselves exactly as we are is scary. And they have created a mirror where you put two mirrors together and you stand in front of it and it's completely reversed and you see yourself as you are, and people are almost terrified at what they see. We're so used to seeing reflections of ourselves and not our real selves that when confronted with our real selves, it's hard to bear. We're hard. It's hard to look at ourselves. It's strange. What Paul and Francis are getting at is what Paul summarizes in chapter 8. And he says, above all this, wherever you have been in your life, whatever you have done, whatever has influenced you, whatever powers have been in a part of your life, however you have been formed or deformed, however you see yourselves as not quite together, however insecure you happen to be, however wonderful your gifts, however challenged you've been, however hurt you are, however wounded you are, he says, there is nothing on this earth that can ever separate you from the love of God. Nothing. This is a man who lived his whole life by the law and who came to realize at the end, when all is said and done, nothing ever can separate you from the love of God. And I know I've said that so many times before, but we need to hear it again and again and again. In the world in which we live, I don't know about you, but it's very hard to walk through the negativity that surrounds us. It's almost palpable in some places. I was in a store the other day. A young black man was in front of me. And he put his thing, a couple things he had on the counter, but he checked out. And the look that came over the face of the woman who was checking us out was unbelievable. It didn't need interpreting. It was obviously filled with anger and rage and almost like, why are you breathing? Have you seen that face before? This is everyday life. And God, if you read the papers and look at television, it's right in your face all the time. It's constant. We call news. It's a frightening time. Tracy O'Shaughnessy has a wonderful article in the paper this morning. Tracy is a friend of mine. We meet in a group, kind of a theological think tank. And Tracy, I think, is a remarkable person as far as writing. She's a great author. She's talking about healthcare. And she goes through, makes 4 points about what really needs to take place, and she's right on, and you would cheer her as well. But the interesting thing at the end of the article is, she said, all the knowledge in the world and all the facts in the world don't make any difference if you can't agree on what you're going to have for lunch. And we can't even agree to disagree. And it's filtering down, unfortunately, to the levels of everyday living. I think what Paul is suggesting is something that we need to grab hold of and make sure that we never let it go. And realize that when we say, nothing can separate you from the love of God, that also applies to everyone else in the world. Nothing can separate anybody from the love of God. And so, yes, our government has to do some tweaking, and our politicians need to understand a little bit of humility. And every one of us probably needs to do a little bit more work on ensuring that what we believe is not just something in our heads, but is something that penetrates the very core of our being and becomes as easy and as normal as breathing. That's what I believe Christianity is really about. And that is why I applaud both Francis and Paul and hold them up to us today as models, not of holiness, but of recognition of humanity and the place of God among us. Now, this was supposed to be a long, drawn-out meditation. I was supposed to do readings, and we were going to do songs. And I can't do that this morning. I am so, so very distracted. Very distracted by everything that is happening. and the only recourse I have is what I offer to you. There's nothing that ever separates me from God. Nothing. Even my own thoughts. And how am I going to extend that to everybody else in the world? That's why I think churches are failing. Religions are hollow. So much of what we do has no meaning because we're missing the most vital, important point that we are all the same.